Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
New England has no timeouts remaining, 23 seconds to play, and the Jets are going officially now to the AFC Championship game against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Bennett. All right.
I typically wait for the kick, the part to kick. Like my name was El Nino. I've told you the El Nino story, one of the funniest things that ever in my life. I'll never forget this. Quick El Nino story. I had a business class in high school. It was like one of those, the electives you could take. It was like, I forget the even name of it, but it was a business class. And we had a teacher named Mr. Banky. And we quickly realized the whole first semester I slept through the class practically. And then we quickly realized in the second semester that we could just do whatever we wanted, that Banky had no control. And we took advantage of that, and I feel bad about that sometimes. But we'll move on from that point. Anyway, I feel really bad about that sometimes. But anyway, I got in trouble one day for something. And he called, he brought me into the office and he called my mom. And I'll never forget. He's talking to my mother on the phone. And he says, I don't know what happened. Because the first 2 months of the year, your son was great. He sat quietly. I was like, yeah, I slept through the whole thing. It wasn't an issue. And this is high school. I'm ninth grade, maybe? Ninth grade? We had no issues. So I'm like 14, 15. We had no issues with him. You know, it was a pleasure having him in the class. And now he I can't deal with him. He's been, I don't know if it's El Nino. And I just remember, like, he blamed my change in mood and behavior on El Nino. He told me, and he was serious. Like, it would be one thing if he made that and like laughed and joked. He was not joking. He was not happy with me. He was talking to my mother and he literally said, I don't know if it's El Nino or what it is, but something has gotten into him. And I'll never forget that, sitting in the office. And I'm like, you just told my mom it's because of a weather. He told my mom because of, like, you know, a certain weather pattern has entered our atmosphere that I've suddenly arose from my slumber of your business class and decided to be a pain in the ass. Okay. It was because I was trying to impress a girl. 888-808-1019. You know who's impressive? You know who's impressive? That Juan Soto. Juan Soto is a Yankee. That's right. And don't give me, at least for now, you losers. For the next 3 weeks, maybe. For now and forever. With his first walk-off for the New York Yankees in extra innings yet again, base hit up the middle, scoring the great John Birdie, who was brought here just for this. It feels like back-to-back nights of walk-off wins for the New York Yankees, who are now two games up on the Baltimore Orioles. And here's my main takeaway. Yes, exciting wins. Loved every second of them. I was pacing in my house. We got to see Clay Holmes, who, again, we got to have a conversation about Clay Holmes. He's not going anywhere, nor should he. He's not the closer right now. Weaver has taken that role. I know they're saying they're going to do all this different stuff and they're going to match ups and blah, blah, blah. But Weaver's the closer. Clay Holmes is not the closer. Unless Weaver stinks it up the next 3 weeks, and believe me, nobody wants that, not even us Clay Holmes defenders. I don't want that. I don't want Clay Holmes to see closer again because that means Weaver's not good. We need him to be good. Clay should not be the closer. But if you thought they were just going to bury him, they need him. You saw nights like last night. They need him when they went to Weaver and Cousins back-to-back nights. You're not going to have everybody available every single time. I know in the playoffs there are days off, and I know Hamilton pitch well, and I know everybody expects this fifth, sixth guy out of the in the rotation to end up in the bullpen. I have no idea. I have no idea if they stay healthy. I know right now they need Clay Holmes, and that's a conversation for a second, but my main takeaway is here we are. It's amazing. The trials and tribulations of a Yankee season and all the quibbling and all the yawling and all the different things, the great starting of the rotation at the beginning of the year, the floundering, the injuries to the rotation, Cole coming back and needing time, Rodon having a stretch of just pitiful pitching and the bullpen in disarray. 3 weeks ago, the bullpen was a disaster. Now you feel like, wow, Weaver's legitimately held down the closer position. Cousins in that slider is a weapon. Canely's got an ERA under 2. And Ian Hamilton just pitched his ass off last night, and he's coming back from injury. You feel good about him. And even Clay Holmes got you through. The bullpen is kind of, and Hill, as a lefty, he's kind of been dominant for the last, like, the bullpen's rounded in the shape. So here we are. What's the problem? The same problem the Yankees have had come postseason time, year after year after year. Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, doesn't matter. And Aaron Judge, still in a slump, the longest stretch of at-bats and games in his career without a home run. And I thought he got one in the first inning. But I mean, it continues to be whether or not this offense is going to score runs, whether or not this offense is going to hit in the clutch, whether or not they are going to find a way to get the runs in that they will need. Because right now, the pitching is kind of rounded into form. They've been pitching their ass off for a while, the entire Cubs series. Like, if you feel good about the start, maybe not Stroman, but Nestor again. Right? The chip on his shoulder since he was moved to the bullpen. Still talking about he's going to do whatever he can for this team, but you know that he's hurting right now, or at least has no interest in being a reliever, but he could possibly be a reliever. He's shown the ability to come in and do that. He's pitched excellent his last two outings. I felt like the last time we saw Rodon, he had to deal with adversity and dealt with it for the first time ever. He seems to be pitching well. Cole is rounding into form. Luis Gil has given up, what, 2 runs in his last 2 outings? Like, right now, between the pitching, the starting rotation, and the bullpen, it's probably been about as good as it's been all year. You feel about as confident in it as you have all year. You feel like there are as many answers in the bullpen right now as you felt there have been all year. And even if they bring up Dominguez, and even if they have Juan Soto, and even though Juan Soto and Aaron Judge are as dynamic a duo we have seen throughout the history of baseball, what happens? The same thing. I've been saying this forever. There's one thing that I worry about in the playoffs. One thing. Can they hit with runners in scoring position? Can they drive in runs? That's what we talk about every single stink in September and October. And here we are. And yes, they got enough last night, and I'm not apologizing for victories. That's a damn good win against the Red Sox, and that was a damn good series against what could very well be a playoff matchup against the Kansas City Royals. And Juan Soto is the Yankee. Big home run, walk-off hit last night. And I'm not worried about Aaron Judge, but we have to just face the facts. Besides that stretch in April, this is the worst we've seen of him. And this is when we need him to be at his best. Because as I've said before, and I'll continue to say again, and I listened to Sal today, and I don't agree with the sentiment that Juan Soto is masking the problems of the New York Yankees. There are problems with the New York Yankees. And by the way, look around the rest of baseball in the American League. There's problems with every team. As the Yankees are right now the number one seed in the American League. That's the team. Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, that you when you get great players, when they do great things, you don't say it's the masking of all the problems. Yeah, of course. They don't have a lineup of all stars up and down the lineup. Do we say that Lindor is masking the problems of the Mets lineup? Do we say that Shohei Ohtani is masking the issues of the Dodgers? This is what the team is built on. When they trade for Juan Soto and you have Soto and Judge, that's the driving force of the team. I mean, sure, you in big spots, you need someone else to beat you. Gleyber Torres hits the leadoff home run. You're going to have the guys come through with hits. Anthony Volpe has two opportunities with two outs and the bases loaded in this game last night, unable to come through. But, yeah, you need the guys. Like, I mean, when it was Poppy and Ortiz, I mean, when it was David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez, yeah, you know, every once in a while, Johnny Damon got you hit. Hit a grand slam in game 7. Sure, you need those guys to come through. But if you went through a series and shut down David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez, you had a good chance to win. Judge and Soto need to be that. And this offense is going to have to score runs, and they're going to be enormous. And Judge is ice cold right now. I know he hit a ball hard that was turned into a double play. I know he kind of laced one right at the center fielder. And yes, he just barely missed a short porch home run. But ultimately, he's not making the same kind of contact and the same kind of pitches he's made. And here we are yet again, worried about this offense. But Nestor Cortes has been great. And I don't know what his role is, but if his role can be a guy who comes in and gives you three innings on a game, or, you know, comes out of the bullpen as a lefty after before you want to use Hill late in the game, or so, like, that's a weapon to have. And especially in that first round, I think you'll only need, hopefully it's the ALDS and not the wild card, because clearly if it's the wild card, all you need is three starting pitchers. But even the wild card with the days off, you might only need three. And if you have Cole, Rodon, and Luis Gil, because Luis Gil's the one guy I don't want to pull in the bullpen. I think that's been proven enough. The guy doesn't throw strikes enough. He just doesn't. I don't trust him in a one-inning spot. I just don't. So if you could have those three guys starting, then you could theoretically throw Nestor Cortes and Clark Schmidt into the bullpen to go along with Cousins and Weaver and Hamilton and Hill and Canely. And yes, Clay Holmes, who came in last night, and I know you were all shaken, comes in extra innings, top of the 10th, one out, runner at second base, and he looked pretty darn good. Although I have to admit, the 0-2 pitch that he got the ground ball on was a hanging slider. Got lucky on that one. But I saw depth to the breaking ball. I saw his best movement on his sinker that we've seen. He's going to have to be a part of this. He's not going to be the ninth inning guy, but he's going to come in. And what situations aren't important moving forward? Every time he comes in, it's going to be important. You can't just banish him and not pitch him. They need him. I know I've just mentioned all these arms. I don't know what they're going to do with Nestor. I don't know what they're going to do with Clark Schmidt. I don't know if those guys are going to stay healthy or go to the bullpen when they have other arms that they trust. Like, I just don't know. They're going to need Clay Holmes. And last night was a huge win against the Red Sox. They are now two full games up on Baltimore. Nestor Cortes is dealing. You feel good about this starting pitching. You feel good about this bullpen, who was dynamic last night, as Nestor only went 5. Hamilton, 2 innings. Canely, 1 1/3. Like, these guys, without Cousins and Weaver, the bullpen was dynamic last night. The pitching is rounding into shape. The offense is still cold, and it's what scares me every single year. That's what this season is going to come down to, because all we care about is winning the World Series, right? You know it, I know it. It's all you care about. The division is just a means to an end. No one's going to throw a parade when they hang the division banner. No one's going to care. You're still going to call this year a failure. It's about winning in the postseason. And as we get ready for the postseason, what does this team look like? The same kind of team that has failed time and time and time again with their offense. The offense is ice cold. They're having a trouble. They didn't score runs in Chicago. They scored 10 runs in game 1 against Kansas City. That's it. Over the last 6-7 games, they've had one game where the offense has broken out. Otherwise, it is clinch your butt, because it is tight out there. Tighter than a Dolphin's ass, and that's waterproof, as my old baseball coach used to say. But here we are. Feel good about the starting pitching. Feel good about the bullpen. Terrified, even with Juan Soto, that this offense is going to figure out a way to score runs. And I mentioned Volpe. I mean, it's starting to get to the point where, I mean, he's going to get this year. I don't know if at this point you could just supplant him with Cabrera, because that's really their only option. I don't think, maybe Birdie could play short. I don't think so. But next year, how could you guarantee him anything? Offensively, he's terrible. Like, he has just not been good offensively. Yes, he's a great defensive shortstop. But, like, at some point, he's got to be better offensively. He's been so disappointing. He had two opportunities to break this game open. But call me not surprised. Not worried about the pitching all that much. Terrified that this offense, again, will not be able to score runs. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Good morning, C-Mac.
What's up?
You're worried about the offense. What is up with 99? He's like nothing? I mean, he's getting a few singles, doubles. Well, where's the power? Is he just in a major slump, or what would you call it?
What would I call John? No, it's not a major slump. It's a slump. I don't know. He's slumping. He's not driving the baseball the same way over his last 60, 70 at-bats.
Lester's been dealing, but who would you trust more, him or Rodon? Who would you trust more? Come on. I mean,
I don't know. It's tough. Rodon's got the better stuff. I
trust Nesta.
Yeah, I mean, I guess,
in a way, why?
He's been terrible on the road. I know, but he's been terrible on the road at times this year.
Yes.
He's had trouble getting through the lineup three times. Like, again, this is what I would say: if you told me, if the Yankees throw a playoff start, and you told me he went two innings, gave up 10 hits and 7 runs, I would tell you that between the two of them, it's Carlos Rodon. And then if I told you he pitched 7 shutout innings with 11 strikeouts, I would tell you it's probably Carlos Rodon. Like that's like he's the guy who has the ability to shut people down. I don't know if Nestor
can
just
when things go bad.
Well, that's why I pointed to last.
Nestor's a little bit more capable of handling when things go bad.
I don't disagree.
Rodon gets flustered too easily.
I know, but that's why I mentioned Rodon's last start. I thought Rodon handled a couple of errors and a couple of mishaps and the drop pop-up. Like, the first play of the game, Jazz throws the ball away and Rizzo can't make the scoop. And then he only gives up that one run and settles in. And then they get the drop pop-up when he should have got out of an inning and he settles back in. Like, I thought he handled adversity better than he has at any point this year, his last start. So I'm hoping he could build on that. But I don't disagree with you. I've been saying that all year. He scares me because the second things go wrong, the second a infield single happens. Remember that Toronto game particularly where there was that ground ball to first and Ben Rice played back on it and ended up hitting off the base for a base hit. It was just like, from that point on, he just got absolutely smashed. Springer hit a couple home runs off of him, and it was just like, he can't handle anything. But I have to admit, he's been pitching great, and his last start, I felt like he handled adversity for the first time. And he didn't turn that error into 3-4 runs. He didn't take that mistake and just completely throw the game away. He settled in. You know, he gave up a hit to give up a run, but then that was it. And he goes deeper into games. He gets more swing and miss, although Nestor did get 9 strikeouts last night. It's tough not to get. Rodon's earned a playoff start. He just has. We might say all we want that we trust him more. That's fine. Who's had the better year? Who's had the more consistent year? Like, you are talking about a span of 5 or 6 starts in the middle of it where Rodon was just plain awful. Other than that, Rodon's been great. Like, as much as we might not like it, you have to admit it, he is. He scares me, no doubt. But he's been very, very good. He's been much more consistent. Nestor Cortez, all year long, consistently not great on the road. Consistently struggled getting through the lineup 3 times. Like, he's had his moments where he's pitched relatively well, and if you look at his, I guess his whip is actually better than Rodon's. He's had a bunch of good starts, but for me, I don't think there's any question who's had the better year, who's had the more consistent year, who's had the more dominating year. It's Carlos Rodon. Chris in Massapequa, what's up, Chris?
Yeah, what's going on, kid? Yo, I loved everything you just said. It's exactly what I've been saying for 2.5 years, and people call me not a Yankee fan because I'm like, they don't hit. This pitching.
Oh, how could
stuff,
you tell? Some people don't call you a Yankee fan when you say they don't hit in the playoffs. It's obvious. That's the reason
they
lose.
Yeah, because they say I'm being negative, and then they say you're not a real Yankee fan.
Yeah, well, you're talking to the wrong people because trust me, the negativity runs deep.
No,
in this
I
fan
love
base.
What you're saying because you're saying exactly what I say to my friends.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying and I'm surprised you have Yankee fan friends who don't just feed into the negativity because I get called way too positive. Yankee fans hate the team.
They crucify me. Oh. They crucify me for saying anything negative. All they got to do is they forget how to hit in the playoffs. And what you just said, I called up right away and I got through. Thank God.
Yeah, well.
And what you just said resonates with everything that I've been saying for 3 years, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I don't mean to knock you because I agree with you and everything, but like you're making it sound like that me and you have this novel idea that you've been screaming from the rooftops and nobody wants to hear it. It's been painfully obvious. I mean, this is not most Yankee fans.
It's been obvious
for
years.
I mean, it's even longer than the last two, longer than the Aaron Judge era, longer than the Aaron Boone era. Like, go back to all the division, the DSs that Joe Torre lost. So they lost because they couldn't hit.
Chris, do you realize that I can't even bet on a Yankee game because I don't trust them? Because they either score 11 runs or they score one run. It's like pick and choose.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Well, we'll see. I mean, because if you look at their numbers in the postseason, it's crazy because, like, I should have liked the tweet to find back, but, like, Gleyber Torres in his postseason career has, like, an 830 OPS. Aaron Judge in his postseason career has, like, a 780 OPS.
Well, now he's batting first.
Yeah, no, he's batting first. If you look at it, Juan Soto in his postseason career has like a 980 OPS. Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, not come the playoffs. They forget how to hit.
No, this is what I'm talking about, their postseason history. This is what I'm talking about. Gleyber Torres in his postseason career has an OPS of like 850. Judge has like 790. Which is down for him, obviously. He's 1,000. He's 1,100 OPS.
Well, yeah, he's not doing well.
But now that they have him, Juan Soto has like just under 1,000 OPS in the playoffs. Giancarlo Stanton with the Yankees has a 900 OPS. So it's like they have some guys who have hit, but they've never been able to put it together. And those guys who they don't get clutch
exactly
hits. Yeah.
What you said to me, which I was listening, I actually had just gotten home. I put my cell phone on. I put you on. And I heard what you were saying, and I was like, this is me talking. You basically were saying everything that I said.
No, I hear you, Chris, and I thank you for the phone call. And I'm not trying to be a jerk because I agree with you, but I'm sorry. We've been saying, me and you are not alone. That's all. I mean, it's been painfully obvious. I didn't decide to just, you know, break Yankee news here at 3:30 in the morning. We're all aware the Yankees have struggled in the playoffs offensively. It's been without question, their biggest issue. Everybody knows this. If you have friends who don't want to hear it, I'm surprised because Yankee fans typically thrive on this conversation. Like they love this conversation. They love to yell about the guys Brian Cashman brought here who can't hit in the postseason. Like this is what we love to do. So, Chris, I'm with you, but we are not alone. It's painfully obvious that the offense has been there, the reason why they lose over and over and over. The only one I could even come, the 2018 Red Sox series. Now, they didn't necessarily hit, but they got beat up a little pitch. That team, it wasn't just the offense in that series, but almost exclusively other than that, it's that they don't hit. Go back to 17. Game 6 and 7 in Houston, they don't score runs. Those are all tight games. They don't score runs. 19 against the Astros, they don't score runs. 20 against Tampa Bay. They don't score runs. They hit. It takes a Brousseau, you know, ninth inning home run against Chapman to beat them. What was it? 2-1, 3-2. Like, they don't score runs. That's been the issue. You want maybe the wild card game in 2021 when Cole didn't have it. But that's about it. And then you even go back deeper than that. Go back to all those ALDSs that they lost under Joe Torre. They lose because they don't score runs. They get shut down by Kenny Rogers in 06 against the Tigers. The Cleveland Indians in 07, Alex Rodriguez wins the MVP. It's 47 home runs. Has an incredible year. Does nothing in the postseason. Like, that's how far this goes back. Mike in Cooperstown. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call, bro.
What's going on?
I want to make 2 points. I want to get your back on the pitching. You know, definitely Rodon. I was surprised the other night when I thought for sure he was going to crumble, and he didn't.
Yep.
I thought that was a good sign, and he was electric. And so definitely Cole, Rodon, and Cortez, you know, for sure. On another note.
I don't know if that's it.
Well, I wouldn't want Stroman there. I mean, I put
– No, I mean, you know, Luis Gil.
Definitely. No, I just don't want Stroman there.
No, Stroman's not the guy right now. No.
You know, I thought one of the best games he pitched for Cortez was when Schmidt opened up, did the four innings before, you know, and then he was lights out and closed out the game. I thought that was pretty cool. I like that combination if you had to. But on another note, too, I'm a big believer with, you know, you start the season one way and you kind of end it in that same neighborhood, you know. It's like, so Judge started off cold April. Now it's September, he's kind of ending cold.
Yeah.
So,
well, open. I mean, he can't afford it, Mike. He can't afford to. They need to win this division, and then he needs to get hot in the playoffs. And that they don't do probably either. Maybe they could win a division. That's how lousy Baltimore's been. But they're not going to win anything if Judge ain't hitting. They're not going to win anything. Doesn't matter if Dominguez is playing. It doesn't matter if they play Wells every single game, which they better in the postseason. All the other things that we argue about and yell about and scream about.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
None of it will matter if Judge does nothing. I promise you.
Manning takes the knee of the New York Giants are the Super Bowl 42 champions.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
They knock off the mighty Patriots 17-14.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
.338 McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. So we went into baseball here because, you know, we'll get into the football, we'll do the picks at the end of this hour, and then we'll have the take a chance parlay on the other side of four. But it is still Planet Baseball, and we got the Mets tonight against Philadelphia. The Yankees still taking on the Boston Red Sox. And last night, another back-to-back games of walk-off wins for the New York Yankees, but that offense scares the hell out of me. The offense still scares the hell out of me. And they've answered a lot of questions. I mean, you know, these guys, they're slumping a little bit, but, I mean, you feel like the lineup is where it needs to be. You got the right guys in there, at least. But, because Judge and Soto, and Soto's coming around a little bit. He was slumping, too, and he still's had some at-bats that I look bad for me. Judge is just flat out. This is how I would say the two of them were slumping. Soto's had more bad at-bats than Judge, but Judge has missed more pitches. Judge has missed pitches he doesn't miss. He's missed a ton of pitches. But, I mean, you feel like you've got an answer in Wells, who could very well be the rookie of the year. Dominguez is up. Rizzo's back, who's, you know, really done nothing. You'd like to see Rizzo do something, and that's really the problem. These guys are all, it's not just those two guys in the middle of the lineup slumping. This offense is struggling, and they're going to have to figure out a way, because really, Gleyber Torres, there's probably not another hitter on the team, including Juan Soto, who got the walk-off hit. There's not another hitter on the team who's playing his best other than Gleyber Torres. Nobody else is at a point where they're playing the best they've played or at the top of their game. Gleyber is the only guy at the top of his game right now. That is it. Even Jazz has cooled off. Like, nobody's out. I guess that's not true. Wells, I suppose. I guess Wells. That's unfair. Wells and Gleyber are the only two who are at the top of their game. Everybody else is down a little bit. I mean, you could argue this is Rizzo's game. You could argue that this is Volpe's game. Like, I think there really needs to be a major discussion around Anthony Volpe. Like, we're getting to the point now where he's had some stretches, certainly to start the year, and then had a brief run in July. But, I mean, he comes up twice in this game with the bases loaded, and it's not good at bats. They're just not good at bats. He doesn't make good contact. He swings at the wrong. He doesn't swing at strikes. Like, he tries to, every breaking ball away, instead of going away with, he pulls and rolls it over to short. Like, I am very concerned. I mean, how long before we're allowed to say we're concerned about Anthony Volpe? It's been pretty much two full seasons. Now, he's going to have an opportunity, much like all these guys do, to break out in the postseason and make us all feel a lot better about him. But, I mean, offensively, Anthony Volpe has just been brutal. And they're going to have to find a way to score. But right now, with, 16, 15 left to play, they're two games up. And I feel like the pitching is really rounded into shape. And it's just a matter of getting this offense to go. And then we get to the Mets, who will start tonight in Philadelphia. Must-watch baseball. I mean, pennant race baseball. I mean, I understand the Yankees on pace and the floor want them to win the division, no doubt. Ultimately, I think now the magic number for them to make the playoffs is 5, which you know what, just for a second, I'm curious what Fliegelman, what Mike, what you think on this one. Because I am one of those weirdos. I love watching my team celebrate. I know a lot of Yankee fans don't like this team. I know that. I think the vitriol is way too far for it, but I understand that they've had this is one hell of a season. Ups and downs, I get it. But I love watching the celebration. I love a season culminating with the champagne pouring all over each other. I love that. So the Yankees now have a magic number to clinch a wild card spot at 5. Theoretically, they could be in a division race for the entire year. And if they come up short in that division race, say on the second to last day or the last day, and they chose not to celebrate making the playoffs, then you never get it. So, like, what would you want your team to do? Now, you guys are, the Mets are different. Obviously, they're playing to get into the wild card. The minute they clinch the wild card, the celebration. But say you're chasing the division, you're two games up on the division. Say they stay two games up and the magic number clinches in 2 days, 3 days, three Yankee wins, two Seattle losses. They've clinched the playoff spot. Do the Yankees celebrate?
They 100% should. Two years ago answered this question for me definitively.
All right.
Because the night the Mets clinched a playoff spot in Milwaukee and did not really celebrate,
right,
I was totally on board. It affected them. Sal and I, going through that, like the final 2 weeks of that season, we were on the same page. It later on, like, oh no, that not having that moment of celebration, that relief, that just kind of, you know, relaxing for a few hours, we think it came back and bit them in the behind. I think you have to celebrate.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if you're wrong. Because ultimately, I agree with what you thought last year on my mind. I'm like, no, we're chasing the division. We shouldn't be happy.
And
like,
I thought it the day of.
Yeah.
Within 2 weeks, or maybe less, I realized, oh no, we were dead wrong.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. And it's going to be tough because I think most Yankee fans aren't going to like it. Most Yankee fans are going to say, why are you celebrating only making the wild card? You got to win the division. And they're not wrong, but you have to celebrate it. You have to. And if they chase the division and fall short, like the Mets did last year, perfect example, then you never get the celebration. And it might affect you.
I know people say, oh, well, in the Yankees, it's a different standard. And yes, and normally I would agree with that. But if you think there's any chance, the overall goal, the ultimate goal is to win the World Series.
Right.
If it could in any way get in the way of that.
Yeah.
You just, that's all that matters.
So I'm curious how the Yankees will handle it, because they're going to clinch a playoff spot in the next few days and the division will not be settled. So I'm curious how the Yankees will handle it. Now, if Baltimore loses the next five games and the Yankees take a 5-6 game lead, then it becomes a hell of a lot easier. But if, say, they lose tonight against the Red Sox, and who's Baltimore playing? I should know this off the top of my head. I think they're playing.
They're at the Tigers.
They're right. They have two series. They have a Tigers series, then someone else, and then the Tigers again. And the Tigers have been the hottest team in the American League the second half. So let's go Tigers. But say
they have the Giants at home after the Tigers.
Giants at home after the Tigers. And then the Tigers again at home.
Best case scenario is the Yankees go to Baltimore and the magic number for the division is one.
Right. If you do that, you probably wait. But I love it. I need the celebration. I get all jazzed up in it. It's a long thing, man. I've talked about baseball and how much I love it. It's a 162-day companion. You ride with this team every night. Every night I'm listening to Boone say the same stuff in the postgame. Every night I'm with them. You know exactly who they are. Like, you know, you see them, and it's the most individualized team sport, obviously. You see their faces when they come to the plate. You know their stats. You know everything. Like, you might not know what every player on the New York Giants, New York Jets looks like. They wear helmets. They play on the field. You don't know their stats off the top of your head. You don't know, oh, he's hitting this. This is how many tackles he has. Maybe sacks, but or receptions or receiving yards, touchdown receiving yards. But like a lot of times, it's not the same. This is every night. I need to celebrate with my Yankees. Mike in Brooklyn, what's up, Mike?
There he is. What's going on, my man? How's everything up? All right?
Good. How are you?
Good. How was Camden, by the way, when you went there? Camden Yards. Did you love it?
Yeah, Camden was beautiful. We loved it. It was a really good time. But I'm sorry to cut you short. We got a break before the pick. So real quick, what do you want to talk about?
Listen, Mets, I'm still like leery. I think it's going to be game to game. I don't think Lindor is going to win MVP. And I'm a big Dolphin fan as well, so that was a big kick in the jewels today.
Yeah, no, last night was brutal. Not only did you get just overrun by your nemesis, really, the Bills and Josh Allen, but to lose Tua in the way you lost them, it's a twofold thing where you're worried about his health, his career, the next few weeks, the state of the organization, the backup quarterback, your standings inside the division, like just one hell of a night for Dolphin fans, no doubt.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
baseball Sunday. So good to me.
All right. It is good to me. And it was good to me last week. As I won the week 3-2. And typical fashion, I got the three picks I liked correct and got both locals wrong because I have no idea how not to stay away from these two franchises. I'm an idiot. Fliegelman finished in second. He went 2-3. And Markle, last year's runaway champion, went 1-4 to start the week. So since we've done the leader goes last, Fliegelman, you get to go first. Picks for week number two in the NFL. Again, if you don't remember, we do three other picks and then the two locals. Five total picks. So, Fliegelman, let's get it rolling.
All right. Well, first I got to point out, Marco has one bad week and then decides not to show up.
That's so true already.
It shows you what a coward he is. So, the three non-locals for me first. Give me the Ravens minus the 8.5 over the Raiders. I didn't include this pick last week, but I did bet the Chargers. I celebrated like a team I rooted for won something when Antonio Pierce punted.
Oh, my God.
Seven and change left, 4th-and-1 at the Chargers 43. I laughed my tail. I mean, that was thank you, Antonio Pierce. I think the Raiders all year, we've talked about it before, are going to be one of the worst teams in the league. It's a countdown until Devontae Adams is traded to the Jets. They have to go into Baltimore against a Ravens team that is on extra rest, is probably really ticked off that they lost that game week one against the Chiefs, looking to put the smackdown on somebody, and they're going to take that out on the Raiders. So that's game number one. Game number two, it's funny because I have the one game is, it's a spoiler for later on.
Okay.
I'm picking it, but I threw the other end in my take a chance.
Okay.
Give me the Cardinals minus the 1.5 against the Rams.
Yeah.
So Sean McVay has dominated the Cardinals in his career. I didn't want to go with some of the bigger numbers like the Lions, and I like this Cardinals team. They were good to me last week against the Bills. I think this offense is legit. They had some really horrible play calls in third down and in the red zone, but they kept pace with the Bills in Buffalo. And as we saw last night, this Bills team is maybe a little bit better or a lot better than we wanted to give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
They're at home, the Rams without Puka Nacua. They have a bunch of guys already going on injured reserve. So I think this is a chance for the Cardinals to maybe sneak by. And if it's a close game, they just have to cover 1.5. So I'm sure I'm setting myself up for the 31-30 Cardinals win.
Right.
But I'll lay the 1.5 with the Cardinals in game three. And then the next one for me, non-local, Eagles minus the 6.5 on Monday night. Now, earlier this line, like before week one, this was a 3.5, 4-point spread. It has jumped. The Falcons looked like a team. You know, Aaron Rodgers didn't look that rusty coming off of his Achilles tear. Maybe it's because he did it a few weeks earlier than Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins
looked terrible. Yeah.
And I know the Steelers have a great defense. The Eagles don't. It's just okay. But they have to go to Philly. It's going to be a party. The Eagles home opener. They come off that week one win against the Packers. It's going to be raucous environment in Philly. I think this Eagles team covers this game by more than a touch. I think they're going to blow them out. The Falcons, they don't have a great defense, and the offense I don't think is ready.
Right.
I still think they'll have an okay season, but there was a lot of rust on that offense, a lot of new pieces in week one. So give me the Eagles. With the locals, look, we've been talking about it all week. If it's not now for the Giants, it's I don't know if we could take the Giants as big underdogs the rest of the way if they don't show up with a little bit of pride and win this game. Washington has a great future with Jaden Daniels. I love Jaden Daniels. They're not ready. They got beat badly by the Bucs last week. The Giants have to show you something. If not, this is going to be, for a franchise that's had a lot of ugly seasons in the last decade, this might be the ugliest if they don't get up off the mat and give you a performance. I know it's a road game. That's not a tough environment in that stadium. Go win on Sunday for Big Blue. And I said last week, even if I think the Jets are going to win some of these games, I'm not picking them until they win a game and cover. So give me the Titans plus 3.5.
Oh, look at you.
Even though if the Jets can't win this game, their season's not over.
Right.
I said a couple weeks ago they were going to go 0-2 and then win 12 games for the season.
Yeah.
But Will Levis looked terrible on Sunday.
Yep.
Please, for the love and for the sanity of all Jets fans, I can't come in here Sunday night and you're reacting to the Jets losing to this Titans team.
Yeah, no, that would be bad.
But I'm picking the Titans.
All right. I'm going to start with the Cowboys at home against New Orleans. New Orleans is coming off an absolute beatdown of Carolina. I think they probably are thinking pretty highly of themselves instead of realizing they just beat a team that was inept. And I love the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. I didn't even think they played that clean a game against the Cleveland Browns and absolutely dismantled them. I think early on, particularly in these seasons, they can get on runs. And I think right now, offensively, they're on a run. I don't like the head coach, obviously, of the... I've talked about Dennis Allen and the quarterback Carr. I don't like that combination. I don't like this team. I know they won by a million points last week. I'm fading them every chance I get. And I think this Cowboy team is legit. I think they'll put up points. And I think the -6.5 is an easy number for me. So give me the Cowboys -6.5. The next two games, I'm kind of just going to play feelings that I've typically always felt and trends that have typically always taken place over the last couple of years. Give me Cincinnati +5.5 against Kansas City. Home favorite of more than a field goal. You'd be surprised how poor this Kansas City team is at covering the spread and how poor Patrick Mahomes is at covering the spread. And I think Cincinnati coming off a miserable loss to the Patriots, unless you're telling me I know his wrist, you know, the famous video over the last couple of days, we've seen it a million times, him flexing his wrist. If you don't trust Burrow, then stay away from this. But I do trust Burrow, and I do trust this team. And I think they were a Super Bowl contender a week ago, and I'm not going to allow one bad loss to the Patriots to change it. I think they have been as good as anyone at bouncing back. If you look at Burrow's numbers, although he hasn't won a single week two in his career, which scares me, but he bounces back from losses as good as anyone in the NFL. And again, Kansas City at home is a big-time favorite. 5.5 here in this case. They've done a poor job of covering the spread. So I'm going to stick with that trend. I like Cincinnati to bounce back. Give me Cincy getting 5.5 on the road in Kansas City. And then Mike Tomlin is one of the easier coaches to bet with in my experience. Road favorite, you know, or home dog. Home dog. Easy bet on Pittsburgh like I nailed last week. This time, on the road as a favorite, this is the kind of game that Pittsburgh struggles with. And I watched a lot of that Seattle-Denver game last week. I thought Denver's defense was far better than I thought it would be. They got after it, especially in the first half. I know they blew the game late, but they got after Geno Smith. And I just have a feeling that at home, this offense is going to find enough to do. Plus, you got this Pittsburgh offense with Fields as the quarterback. I don't trust it at all. I just don't trust it at all. And especially Mike Tomlin, again, for me, this is just the trend. Home dog, I bet him. Road favorite, I stay away. That has done good for me over the last couple of years. So I'm going to take the upstart Denver Broncos to have a good performance against Pittsburgh. Give me Denver +2.5 at home against Pitt. And then the two locals, I've been saying it all week. I feel like I've given away my pick. I'm going with the Giants +1.5. This is it. This is the last time I will bet them at all, the last time I will pick them. They've had success against this team. They were terrible last week against the Bucs. I think, you know, Daniel Jones has played well against this franchise for whatever reason, and this defense is putrid. I think they're going to try and get their run game going and make things easier for Daniel Jones. I think they're going to be able to do that a little bit. And I just think, hopefully, this offensive line of the Washington as well was brutal in that game. This is the game Kayvon Thibodeau famously Sunday night against Washington rookie season had that big coming out party. I think Burns and Thibodeau get after the quarterback a little bit, make Daniel's day a little bit tough, and they find a way to win a football game. If they don't, I don't even know what I'll think about the Giants moving forward. So give me the Giants +1.5. And then, yeah, I'm all over the Jets here. You know how I feel about them. I think they're going to bounce back from that terrible loss. I think the defense is going to focus on stopping the run, and Will Levis is awful. He threw away a 17-point lead against the Chicago Bears, who didn't even need to score an offensive touchdown to not only overcome that, but to come back and win by a touchdown. They didn't need an offensive touchdown. That's how bad Will Levis was in this Tennessee Titans team was. So give me the Jets. I think this is the game where we get our first real glimpse of this high-flying Aaron Rodgers offense. I don't think it's particularly close. I think 3.5 is an easy, sweatless cover. Give me the Jets -3.5 against Tennessee. So I got the Cowboys at home against Nola getting 6.5. Cincy on the road getting, Cowboys giving 6.5. Cincy on the road in Kansas City getting 5.5. And Denver at home against Pitt giving 2.5. I have them right here. And then Giants and Jets. And we got Marco's picks real quick. Marco's with me on the Cowboys, -6.5. He's taking the Texans over the Bears, -6.5. Jaguars over the Browns, -3.5. And for his locals, He's taking the Jets -3.5 and the Giants +1.5. We don't learn.